Could I ask you to take your seats, please? My name is Richard Koslerich. I'm director of the Special Initiative of the Muslim World at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and it's my pleasure to chair this this session on Afghanistan and the future of the post-conflict reconstruction there. We have, before I get started, a reminder of what Paul Stairs said earlier. We're going to have to end this session exactly at 12:15 so we can move people into the lunch so that we can hear Deputy Secretary Armitage. So if there are any questioners at the microphone who I have to cut off at 12:15, you will receive a rain check to use to ask a question at a future USIP session. The title of this session presumes, at least in my mind, that we are into a post-conflict phase in Afghanistan. I think that is far from self-evident. And whether the military phase of the operation is over or ending or not, there are still a lot of unanswered questions that will only be solved by military action. But the question of the post-conflict situation is something that must be addressed. The role of an international security force, the strengthening of central authorities in Kabul, and indeed the role of the international community, both in a political and a military sense. We have an excellent panel to discuss these and other issues. Zalmay Khalilzad is on his way, they tell me, and so when he arrives, we will have him take over after we hear from Dr. Barnett Rubin, who's Director of Studies at New York University, Center for International Cooperation, a well-known writer. His book, Fragmentation of Afghanistan, is now in its second edition. And we have Michael Sheehan, who's UN Assistant Secretary General in the Department of Peacekeeping Operations and former coordinator for counterterrorism at the Department of State. So, Dr. Rubin, why don't we start with you, and we'll have Zalmay as he arrives. As you wish.
The light will follow. Thank you. I'm going to make a few informal remarks. I just returned from Kabul. If today's Thursday, then I returned from Kabul less than a week ago. And that's my third trip since January. So I'll offer some assessments of where we are and what is needed. Of course, I should note, Sam Lewis pointed this out to me earlier, and then I went and checked. There have been some events, very dangerous-sounding events in Afghanistan today, which some of you may not have heard about. There were two bombs that went off in Spinzar Square in Kabul in front of the Ministry of Information, apparently killing, according to one report, 15 to 20 people, another 30 to 40 people. And there has also been an assassination attempt on President Hamid Karzai during a visit to Kandahar. Apparently he was not harmed, but there was firing into his vehicle. And I think that certainly illustrates the point that our chair made, which is that Afghanistan is not really in a post-conflict phase. Let me first start by situating Afghanistan within the overall problem that we're discussing today. The terrorists who launched these attacks almost a year ago were not Afghans, and many of them did not come directly from Afghanistan either. They had been organizing apparently in Hamburg and elsewhere in the West, including in Florida. But it was the breakdown of order, the lack of a legitimate state of policing functions in Afghanistan that led to the development of an extremist outlaw, I would say quasi-regime, because it really didn't have many of the attributes of a government, which created an opportunity for such outlaw groups to establish a center which was necessary for building up the capacity of this loose network around the world. So in a sense, these events illustrated the ultimate threat, the security threat to us very directly, that so-called failed states can present. That is, not that the people there are so poor they resort to terrorism, because Afghans didn't, but because they represent a kind of hole in the fabric of international order and lawfulness, which creates opportunities for this kind of malign group. And I think we've yet to absorb the full lesson of that with regard not only to Afghanistan, but other failed and chaotic states as well. Within Afghanistan, there has been a constant tension as to what the strategic goal of U.S. policy should be. And I think we may be moving toward a resolution of that, but it still is not resolved. Is the U.S. primary goal in Afghanistan to capture the primary suspects for the acts of September 11th and then move on to do other things to disrupt al-Qaeda and other terrorists with global reach or other terrorists everywhere in the world? Or is the, as I would, and this is of course what I have been advocating since that time, should the strategic goal in Afghanistan be to take the occasion afforded by the U.S. presence there in response to September 11th to help Afghans establish a stable state or stable enough state that it can be a responsible member of the international community and sufficiently police its own territory, at least to prevent such threats? And a state with those capabilities would also, of course, be capable of providing more things to the Afghan people, and in particular, a certain minimal level of security. The recent statements by Undersecretary Wolfowitz of the Defense Department about the change in U.S. military orientation, as well as reports of a similar nature that I was receiving while I was in Afghanistan, namely that U.S. military policy is going to be much more oriented towards support for security and for reconstruction, and that the U.S. will actively support the expansion of the International Security Assistance Force, is, in my view, a somewhat belated but very necessary and welcome change in U.S. policy. And I say that with some degree of urgency because I observed during my recent trip a number of rather troublesome trends. Now, people often ask me, in fact, I wish they would stop asking me this, but I guess I can't stop it. They ask me, are you an optimist or a pessimist? How do you think it's going? And I think we have to have a sense of perspective, first of all, about this and remember how we thought it was going 12 months ago in Afghanistan. And, of course, the answer is that we can now realistically imagine all kinds of positive things for Afghanistan and even see some of them, which we could not really have imagined a year ago, and that the main reason for that is the change that was brought about by the international but primarily U.S. response to the events of September 11th. So that is the baseline fact that we, of course, have to keep in mind. Within that, there are a long list of positive and negative things that one can mention. You know, the establishment of this government, the return of many qualified Afghan exiles, the reestablishment of the media, the growth of certain aspects of economic life, the return of over one and a half million refugees now, which is overwhelming the capacity of international organizations and the Afghan government to cope with them, but which is a kind of vote of confidence in the new situation, the development of more friendly relations with Afghans' neighboring states, and many other things. At the same time, I found a number of negative things that were new, and let me mention those because I think they add up to a troubling trend. One, of course, is the growth of this kind of terrorism that we saw today. One of my long-term acquaintances in the intelligence agencies, who previously was working for Ahmad Shah Massoud, said to me, "If you knew how many plots like this we stop every day, you wouldn't remain in this city for one day." This was one today that they didn't manage to stop. Overall, these terrorist attacks, which are something new, and there was one small thing or one or two small such things taking place every day during the 12 days that I was in Afghanistan in August, they take place in the context of a kind of political disappointment over the results of the Lloyd Jirga, which was held in June. I think that that disappointment may have been based on exaggerated expectations that after 6 months, Afghanistan would be able to have a much more democratic or representative government after 6 months after the bond agreement and after 23, 24 years of devastating war. But people did have those expectations, and to some extent they were disappointed. Although still, even the fact that elections were held for for the La Jirga, and the people estimate maybe 70% of those elected were elected honestly, is a tremendous triumph for the country. And a lot of the real issues of the country were articulated by those delegates, even if their grievances were largely not addressed. Second, I found for the first time since I've been going there, since January, a growing resentment of the U.S. presence. Now, I don't want to be misunderstood. I did not find people equating it with the Soviet presence or with the Pakistani presence in support of the Taliban. Even the people who expressed this resentment to me did not want the U.S. to leave because they were afraid of what the results would be. But people in the Pashtun areas are increasingly resentful of what they feel is attacks that are targeted against what them and what they see is a biased way in the use of accusations of being a Taliban by factional leaders to target one group or another. While I was there, an elected delegate to the Lo Jirga was arrested in Kunar by the U.S. forces after they invited him for peaceful talks at his base, and there was a lot of concern at the U.S. base. There was a lot of concern over that. And there's starting to emerge some cultural resentment about the behavior of the Westerners, not only the U.S. troops and so on. And as I mentioned, a perception, which is quite strong among Pashtuns, of ethnic bias on their part. I believe that is a misperception. The fact is the U.S.'s military allies were predominantly non-Pashtuns in the north, and their opponents were predominantly based in the Pashtun areas. But this has led, and that is the reason for the actions that lead to this perception. But there is a growing perception that the U.S. presence is ethnically biased against Pashtuns in Afghanistan. Going along with that is a fairly good consensus among international staff who live in southern Afghanistan that there is a revival of political support for the Taliban in those areas. That doesn't necessarily translate into guerrilla or terrorist activity, but the fact is the Taliban came to power on the issue of stability and security, which they provided more than the period of warlordism beforehand. The people have lost that security and stability, and they haven't gotten the benefits of reconstruction, development, and assistance that they are expecting. In particular, what aid there is has gone disproportionately to northern Afghanistan, both humanitarian and reconstruction. And that is leading to a trend. And this revival support for the Taliban cannot be dealt with militarily. There may be military aspects of it that may have to be dealt with militarily, but it would intensify these negative trends if the U.S. and other military forces in the area responded to it primarily militarily. It will have to be dealt with politically. And finally, there's a tremendous loss of faith in the promises of reconstruction made by the U.S., the U.N., the donors, and generally speaking, to the common Afghan, these are all lumped together as the same thing, because simply most people have seen very little, if they've seen anything. They may have seen a school rebuilt or something, but the major infrastructural assistance that they were expecting very quickly hasn't come, in particular road construction, the expansion of security assistance, and other things like that. So a feeling is kind of growing that Afghanistan is once again being used by outside powers in their own interest, and that the people of Afghanistan are not going to benefit. So I wouldn't say the window is closing. It's definitely not. There's still a lot of hope. There's still a lot of potential. But we have to deliver, you know, and we have to deliver within the next 6 months, I would say, or the next 18 months during which Afghanistan is supposed to draw up a constitution, develop a more stable government, and so on, according to the Bonn Agreement, is not going to go as planned. Now, as I said, the issue of security is vital, and that will involve a number of things, and it's not... And I think it's usually oversimplified one way or the other. The expansion of the International Security Assistance Force, which the U.S. has either resisted or opposed and which European powers don't want to contribute to, still seems to be vital, especially in northern Afghanistan, where there has been another round of very heavy factional fighting while I was there, mostly over the control of economic resources, with people getting rearmed and remobilized who had, to some extent, disarmed in the past. But again, we shouldn't have the illusion that the expansion of ISAF is going to provide security throughout the country. It won't. It's not going to provide road security. It might provide a way to calm some of the major regional power holders. I don't have time to go into this. It's connected, of course, to the building of new security forces, which has been the focus of U.S. policy. But again, that will take years. And furthermore, it is not, as it has usually been presented by the U.S. government, primarily a technical training exercise, because it won't help to build new security forces if you do not demobilize the old security forces, or you will just be building an eighth factional army. So the key element, then again, is the actual military regional power holders today who need to be civilianized, marginalized, incorporated. There are different strategies for it. And that will involve a package of actions involving financial aid to the government, support in various ways for the finance minister's efforts to centralize the customs revenue, support and backing for the new currency that is going to be issued, some military security presence during the period of transformation of the security forces. And that, in turn, will be the way that this ethnic issue can be addressed, because it's primarily the ethnic domination of the security forces which creates that perception today, that is the domination by Pancheris and Tajiks from North Afghanistan. Finally, I think my time is probably up, if not more so, but again, we should realize that is not just a political issue, and it cannot be solved by getting rid of General Fahim and appointing a Pashtun general, because again, it has to do with the character of these security forces, which are ethnic in makeup and in loyalty. And the question now is, as many people agree, there, it would be better if there were another defense minister, but can anyone else be the defense minister right now, given that there are so many heavily armed commanders in North Afghanistan who will listen to Fahim but would not listen to someone else? That is, as Fahim said to me in a dinner, it'll be a long time before personal relations are more important than institutions in Afghanistan. But what the United States and the UN and the efforts that the U.S. should support, and the other donors who have been very weak in coming forth with their pledges, and in acting in a more multilateral way, need to do is support the building of those institutions with an adequate security presence while we're doing it, and that is going to take a considerable amount of time. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak here this morning. It's a great pleasure, and thank you for inviting the United Nations as well, as I represent them today. It's a great personal pleasure for me to be here as well. A bunch of former bosses and colleagues, friends are here. It's a real honor to be here to discuss some of these issues today. I'm going to talk about the UN and its role in Afghanistan, but I'd like to start off with a couple observations that dovetail with some of the things that have already been said today, with a little bit of a twist on my observations about Afghanistan from my previous job at the State Department as a coordinator for counterterrorism. And again, I want to talk about a little bit about those characteristics that defined Afghanistan as a primary swamp of terrorism. Prior to 9/11, as was already mentioned, Afghanistan was a sanctuary of impunity for the Taliban, for the Afghanistan and its associated organizations. In my last job, I referred to it as terrorist swamp, a breeding ground of terrorists that became increasingly organized and increasingly lethal against the United States and U.S. interests. It was the center of gravity for this international organization that had a reach of increasing a global reach. And what were some of those characteristics that existed prior to 9/11, and what of those characteristics still exist today, and how does that fit into what the U.S. and the UN, hopefully together, are trying to achieve in Afghanistan? And obviously, as mentioned before, the primary major significant change is that Taliban no longer exists as the regime in charge of Afghanistan, and that is a huge accomplishment. However, let me tick off a couple other characteristics of Afghanistan that made it the preeminent swamp for terrorists prior to 9/11 and suggest that some of those still exist and should remain the focus of some of our efforts. First of all is obviously the geographic isolation of Afghanistan made it particularly welcome for certain terrorist organizations. Now, obviously, you can't move a country's geography, but its geographic isolation was exacerbated by a complete lack of infrastructure and lines of communication in the country that not only gave the country itself a geographic isolation, but certain pockets of it were also very isolated. Secondly, a lack of central authority in Afghanistan that was experienced in some 20 years of conflict within its borders. There was no central authority there. And, of course, that central authority is, again, exacerbated by its geographic isolation and lack of infrastructure, and I mentioned in the first point. Thirdly, as mentioned by Barney just recently in his remarks, that there was a groundswell of some sort of support for the Taliban, of course, in many parts of the country, but particularly in the south and in the eastern parts of the region. There was a lot of support for the Taliban. That still exists, and there's somewhat of a resurgence of that. There was also another more complex support for some of these terrorist organizations and jihadists that came to Afghanistan for a variety of different reasons, some to participate in the civil war there, some to prepare for civil wars in other parts of the world, and others for a more focused terrorist agenda. But they did find some hospitality there, and I think that also remains to a certain degree in certain parts of Afghanistan. So those characteristics that made it the preeminent terrorist swamp, in my view, many of them still exist, notwithstanding the demise of the Taliban. And it's also my personal view that Al-Qaeda will try to remain in that part of the world. I thought, and prior to 9/11, bin Laden did not have anywhere to go that even closely gave him the benefits of it for his operation in Afghanistan, and I still believe that to be the case. I believe if he is alive, he's still in that area and will remain there. And I think that the headquarters and primary command and control cells of Al-Qaeda will also remain in Afghanistan or the immediate environs, the border areas between its neighbors, primarily Pakistan, but perhaps, as mentioned earlier, Iran, or perhaps into Central Asia. There may be some areas for them to operate out of. So let me shift now to talk about what the UN is trying to do in Afghanistan, and hopefully our mutual policies, the UN, the U.S., and other partners there in Afghanistan, will address these issues and try to address some of those issues that created this swamp. The UN has been given quite a task in Afghanistan. On the political front, we were given the role of political reconciliation and economic reconstruction. The UN was probably the only organization that it could have taken on this brokering mission on the political side, given the multiplicity of national and international actors that needed to be, the consensus needed to be forged in order to move a process forward in Afghanistan. And despite some enormous odds that were predicted last year, say September and October of last year, we've had some successes. Many have called what Lakhdar Brahimi, our special representative in Afghanistan, has pulled off a diplomatic masterpiece by pulling together the Bonn Agreement. This obviously he couldn't have done by himself. It was very much a partnership between the UN as well as the U.S. and others, and particularly Zal, who's just arrived a little bit late, and we're glad he's here, Jim Dobbins, and other diplomats that were working very closely with Mr. Brahimi in Bonn to pull off that political masterpiece, as it's been implied. However, good work, always you're punished with more work when you do good work. So the UN has been asked after that to pull together the Loya Jirga within 6 months and support various commissions that help Afghanistan get on its feet. And I think we've done a credible job. Again, the Loya Jirga has been successfully concluded, although not a perfect exercise, has gone a long way in establishing some sort of legitimate governance in Kabul. The UN has expanded its presence. We have a staff of about 150 within the UN organization itself. I believe the full international presence is somewhere in the 500 or 600s, which may sound large, but actually is fairly small as we try to continue with an Afghan presence up front and keep the international footprint light, as it's been described. We're in seven cities throughout Afghanistan operating there now, trying to coordinate the political, humanitarian, and other efforts of the United Nations. The UN recognizes its limitations very much, not in Afghanistan, but overall. Many of the UN policymakers there now, including myself and others, are veterans of some of the scars the UN experienced in the 90s, Somalia, Bosnia, Srebrenica, Rwanda, and others. So we're very aware of the limitations of the UN and how it can get itself into difficulties if not carefully guided. But we're also have a renewed confidence that we have been able to do some things, and I'll come back to that a little bit later. But we recognize our shortcomings. We recognize that we're only as good as the member states that join us and help us to implement things on the ground. I might tick off some of the shortcomings we have right now. something that we continue to work on. The financial pledges in Tokyo for the reconstruction effort, thus far, only about 30% of the $1.8 billion that were pledged have been received. And we're going to need, obviously, to get that money in the pipeline and then actually get it out onto the ground in order to change some of the conditions that Barney had alluded to in his remarks. Secondly, we recognize that the UN cannot enforce a peace. The International Security Force, which is in primarily in Kabul right now, commanded by the British General John McCall during the Loya Jirga, did a fantastic job of holding Kabul together. And we recognize that now and welcome talk about expanding that that presence beyond Kabul. Third, we know that we are an assistance mission. Although the UN has had some success in East Timor and Kosovo and actually helping to administer parts of the world that have been troubled by conflict, in Afghanistan we clearly are going to remain in the assistance role mode and remain a step behind the Afghans as we try to push them forward into reconstructing their country. What is the main task ahead? Obviously, the main task is political and returning, preventing a return to civil war. But I would suggest that parallel to that will be recreating the security structures in Afghanistan, the military and police structures that will enable Afghanistan to reestablish some sort of sovereignty over its territory, some sort of control over its territory, and address those very issues that created the swamp prior to 9/11. By establishing control, obviously you can eliminate geographic isolation, but you can mitigate those effects. By establishing a political process there that prevents a return to civil war, you'll again eliminate those conditions where those groups were able to come and foster their growth there. So I think that that is the key challenge for the UN and the U.S. to keep the political process moving forward, to prevent a return to civil war, which is not going to be an easy task, as we see every day unfolding around the country, and to build those security structures and put them in place. We think the UN, as I said, we're humbled by some of our past problems, but we also remain confident that we can do things. We've successfully turned over a new administration in East Timor, a new government there, a new country has been created out of that slice of territory in the Eastern Pacific. We have run elections in Sierra Leone, a country that was terribly torn apart by warfare. We have trained police forces in the Balkans and helped them get them on their feet. We're running a massive operation in the Congo now, attempting to keep a peace process moving forward in a very difficult situation. So we have some confidence that we can do some things. We're also humbled enough to know that we're only as good as the partners that come with us, and particularly the United States, and also with the will of the people, the local people on the ground, to be committed to a peaceful process. But we go there with a sense of confidence coupled with the humility that we can get the job done working in partnership. We also feel that we need to be in there for the long term, and going back to my previous hat as a coordinator for counterterrorism, I'm convinced that we're going to need to be there for the long term, both on a security structure and in terms of the political and economic commitment to that country, or those organizations will not only remain there, as I know they will, but will also regain their operational capacity to strike back at the United States. I look forward to participating in the rest of the discussion and turn it over to Zal.
First of all, I want to apologize for coming a little late, and it had to do with the Afghan part of my portfolio. There are some ongoing developments that kept me at the White House. I want to start by offering our condolences to the families of the victims of the terrorist attack in Kabul. The most recent information that we have is that there were two explosions, one small, followed by a larger one, aimed obviously at killing as many people as possible. President Karzai, there was an attempt on his life in Kandahar, and based on the reports that we have, he is fine. But these developments indicate the continuing challenges that we face in Afghanistan. I will talk about these, but I want to start by saying that compared to the situation in Afghanistan only a year ago, when the backward extremist group controlled much of Afghanistan, a group that had totalitarian aspirations, a group that had provided safe haven for terrorist groups, groups with global reach as well as regional reach, the situation is better, but we have a long way to go, and that is sort of the summary of my message for you today. As you know, after the horrific events of September 11, the United States, with its international partners, set three goals for themselves in Afghanistan. One was to root out the Al-Qaeda network in Afghanistan. Two, to defeat the Taliban regime since it refused to surrender the Al-Qaeda that was based on its territory. And three, as Ambassador Sheehan said, given the situation that existed in Afghanistan, which facilitated the country becoming the base of operation for these terrorist networks, to ensure that the conditions do not go back to restart, refacilitate, or allow once again for that sort of a situation to return to Afghanistan. Well, with regard to these three objectives, we have made progress in each area. Certainly, the brutal misrule of the Taliban has ended in Afghanistan. The central government, despite the problems that it has, enjoys, in my view, broad popular support. It is a moderate government that seeks to build a democratic and modern country that will cooperate and be part of and cooperate with the international community in the war against terror, and to become a responsible member of the international community. The people of Afghanistan have had the opportunity, as again Ambassador Sheehan said, maybe imperfectly, but they've had the opportunity through the Loi Jirga and the bond process to participate. The process that bond started as a multi-stage process, ultimately leading to elections and the choice of a political system by the Afghans. But getting to that stage consciously was decided to be done in stages, given the fragmentation of Afghanistan, given the strong negative feelings that exist in the country, to move immediately from the civil war conditions to one of political parties-based elections was regarded to be too much, too soon. So there was a 6 months interim authority based on participation of four parties to a Loi Jirga that was not elected directly but through indirect election and selection process, moving then to a constitutional commission that will draft a new constitution, choice of a political system, in other words, a Loi Jirga that will decide that and then elections in the country. The hope being that through these processes and at the same time with the development on the economic, positive development, economic front, on learning habits of cooperation, that when it comes to the direct elections, participation by political parties, that would not cause conflict, but actually take place in a peaceful atmosphere. On the objective with regard to terrorism, it's our judgment that much of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan has been either killed, dispersed, or captured, or are on the run, and we are in pursuit of them. I said there has been progress, but we have a long way to go, and the challenges that we faced, I would put them in three categories, very much consistent with what Ambassador Sheehan said. One is the, with regard to terror. We will, of course, pursue the remnants, what remains of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. The coalition will stay. This is important in itself because these what remains of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan pose a challenge to our security and the security of our friends, but also it's important for consolidating this new order in Afghanistan, which is our objective now. Having established it, we would like to see this new order consolidated. If Al-Qaeda and Taliban remain, they are not happy, clearly would not be happy with this new order, they would pose a threat to it. And that's why the transitional authority is very supportive of the continuing effort to finish the job, so to speak, in Afghanistan against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Sometimes there are discussions about tactics, and that's natural, but with regard to the objective of getting rid of what remains of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and to pursue that objective by use of force, support, broad support in the transitional authority. With regard to other security challenges, there are several ones. First of all, I have to say that security is very important for Afghanistan's reconstruction and recovery. Without it, efforts in consolidating the new order in would be put at risk, investment will not come, and people will not be willing to put their resources at risk. There are, of course, a variety of security challenges. There's not a single security problem in Afghanistan. Differs from region to region. I've already talked about one that we take the primary responsibility for, which is the Al-Qaeda Taliban, but in addition to that, there is the security of key personnel of the transitional authority. It's my judgment that the focus of Al-Qaeda and Taliban and some of the other extremists that are in cooperation with them, including some warlords who are not in support of this new order, is two. One is the coalition forces where we are, and second, it's the transitional authority, and primarily, of course, personalities and confidence in the transitional authority. And so you've seen in recent days and weeks, not only attacks, a lot of the attacks that have taken place against our forces in the east and south, but also a lot of attacks in Kabul and attacks against the person of the president that I referred to. Of course, there are also security of the capital being where the seat of the transitional authority. With regard to the first of this issue, we've taken some direct steps of our own, as you've read in the newspaper, to assist with the security of President Karzai, And we are also training Afghans to be able to take on that responsibility themselves over time. Second, with regard to Kabul, of course, there is ISAF, and it has played an important role, and it will add our expectation is that that role will continue for the foreseeable future. We will support a continuing role for ISAF beyond its current mandate, which ends at the end of the year. In addition, there are security challenges in various regions of Afghanistan, in cities, that the potential problem of conflict among regional leaders, problems of law and order, and with regard to those, we are looking at our approach has been to assist the regional leaders or warlords by providing advice, by suggesting to them, by having our people in those areas to discourage them from going to war against each other, and for them to cooperate with each other and with the new order in Afghanistan to transform themselves and to be part of the solution or the future of Afghanistan. But we are open-minded with regard to other options to deal with this problem of security in other areas, and in that would include the possibility of some ISAF role. Our overall approach has been and will continue to be that it is the best solution is for Afghans to be self-reliant with regard to security, to fight for their own security, and that we have put an emphasis on training the Afghan army and the Afghan police, and introducing helping with the establishment of a judicial system that people can have confidence in, and the progress in these areas have been slow. It is our view that, and we will take steps to speed up the establishment of the army. Some battalions have already been, two battalions have been trained already, and we would like to see that expanded. We also would like to see greater coordination and improved coordination among different countries that have the lead responsibility for different segments of the Afghan security institutions. The Germans, for example, have the police, the Italians, the legal system, the Brits with regard to counter-narcotics, the Japanese with regard to demobilization. We need to do a much better in terms of coordination, and at the same time to increase to speed the rate of sort of production of security sector providers is very critical. Second issue that's important is with regard on the economic front, and that is reconstruction. Reconstruction and security kind of reinforce each other. As I said, without security, reconstruction will be difficult. What reconstruction, in turn, can produce security by providing jobs and reducing the opportunity for troublemaking by extremists. Who, in the absence of progress, improvement in the conditions of people, would make use of the discontent that would result. As Ambassador Sheehan said, we are concerned that as much has not been delivered in terms of reconstruction based on the commitments that were made in Tokyo that should have. We are, the President personally and other senior leaders in the U.S. are personally pressing others to make good on their commitments. 30%, that Ambassador Sheehan said, of what was committed in Tokyo for this year is inadequate. We're considering some initiatives of our own to assist in expediting reconstruction. Much of the assistance that has been provided so far has been in the humanitarian domain rather than reconstruction. The humanitarian activities are obviously important in keeping people alive, but we need to put greater emphasis, do more on the reconstruction front, and that is very important with regard to the consolidation of the new order. I think two key areas which have, we think it's very important. One is what was said before, the Afghanistan's isolation. We think that it's very important that there is a regional cooperation with regard to trade and economic development. One of the opportunities that the change in Afghanistan may have created, and I think it will reveal itself in the course of time, is options, additional options for trade for some of the other countries in the region, and we need to encourage that. And in order for that to happen, infrastructure in Afghanistan, particularly roads, have to be built, and this is an important area of focus, I think, that should be for the international community. Also, another feature has been that because of the lack of capacity in part of the Afghan transitional authority, the interim administration beforehand, much of the assistance that goes through Afghanistan has gone through NGOs rather than through the Afghan government. We need to do more to increase the capacity of the Afghan transitional authority to do more for in terms of delivering services and playing a role in the reconstruction of the country. Last issue that again is important for the consolidation of the new order is on the political track. I'm relatively optimistic, more optimistic in terms of my assessment of the political track than the progress on the security and reconstruction track. I think people have very much kept to the timelines of the Bonn Agreement on the political track. The transitional authority left office on time. The Loijirga was held on time. President Rabbani, to go even earlier, did transfer power based on that agreement, and the transitional authority did not extend itself, which is, we are all familiar with such possible developments in other countries and regions. And I think I'm hopeful that the Constitutional Commission will be announced soon, and the sooner the better, and that a draft constitution will be presented to the Loijirga, and that there will be elections. Based on my discussions of a couple of weeks ago in Kabul, pretty optimistic that on that track things will move forward on schedule. Of course, there is a struggle for the future of Afghanistan that's ongoing. We've made progress, but the forces that do not want the kind of order that we envisage and we support, and we believe that the most Afghans want, they are going to be also active, and therefore it's our judgment that to succeed, we need to remain committed, and we need to stay there for the duration. I can say with full confidence to you, I can report to you that the President is very much committed to this course of action. He views the success of Afghanistan as the success of the United States, and a failure there as having serious consequences that we saw in the 1990s for our security. We will be there no matter what else happens there until we do succeed, we do help Afghans consolidate this new order, and they stand on their own feet. Thank you very much.